Everyone has a study guide in front of you. Who does not have one? Why? He's sick. So who's the next group leader in the group? Can we arrange this quickly? Give them the study guides. Get the names down quickly. Yes, but somebody has to take the names down in your group. You're getting a study guide. What's your name? Chirag. Who's your group leader? Rohini. Okay, can you make it quickly? Yes. Raja duty. Haribol. When someone comes in late, I'm going to send them to you. That's the best way it's going to work because I'm moving on. I said, okay. So tell him to give the study guys. He can sit down. You have a chair for yourself. There's one chair right here. Okay. But there's plenty of chairs around now. Okay. So let's move on. So we're on page number 2. So this particular verse is chosen. I need your attention, and if you're not attentive, I'm going to ring this bell to get your attention. So on page number 2, it says Section A, Introduction, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Everyone can repeat. Akama Sarva Kamova. Moksha Kama Udaradi. Kivrena Bhakti Yogena. Yajeta Purusham Param. Volunteers, anyone? For the verse. Translation, you can repeat. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desire, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the supreme hall, the personality of Godhead. So below that you see there's a short purport of four lines, which is not the purport of the actual verse, but it's the purport of that particular verse that says Srimad Bhagavatam 4:21-34. Because the purport to the verse that we read is lengthy. So that same lengthy purport is summarized by Srila Prabhupada in this purport, in four lines. So let us see. I'm reading. I'm just reading the purport. But when I say everyone, it's part of the purport. They're so eager to follow with faith blindly. Whatever I say is absolute. Be careful. Okay. Everyone, whether akama a devotee. So that one will be explained in this diagram. Express elevator of bhakti yoga, which is in your notes on page 4. Okay? You don't have to go to page 4. We just stick to the page we are reading. So everyone, whether akama a devotee, that is express elevator. Then it says sarvakama a karmi. This is the yoga ladder 1 on page 6. In other words, these ladders and the diagrams, all three, two ladders and express elevator, is going according to this purport. So akama a devotee, sarvakama a karmi, or moksha kama a jnani or a yogi in this ladder. Okay? And all the notes are strictly Prabhupada's purports and translations. Okay. He is encouraged to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the direct method of devotional service. In this way, one can get both material and spiritual profit simultaneously. So the word material and spiritual profit simultaneously, this indicates even if you want to fulfill your material desires, you should be approaching Krishna. But Krishna is so expert that he can fulfill your material desires in such a way and simultaneously he can root it out. And how he does it, you can ask him when you meet him. Because he won't give the formula to anyone. Then you can become God. But that's Krishna's mysticism. Like that. Okay? Now, who's here sitting here for the first time, didn't come yesterday? Raise your hand. Quite a number. So yesterday we did a group work and the first group gave their presentation on Karmakanda. There are six groups. The group F is going to help us understand the difference between Bhakti Yoga and Bhakti. Sakama Karma Yoga is group B. Each presentation is 20 minutes, 10 minutes for questions. If it gets more interesting and deep, we can give more time. Okay? Nishkam Karma Yoga, they are going to show us the difference between Sakama, Nishkama and Akama. Similarities and difference, they're going to help us understand that. The Jnana Yoga group is going to also help us understand the difference between Mayavadis and Brahmavadis because both are impersonalists. And then there's the Ashtanga Yoga group and then there's the group which is not on the board, an extra group, difference between Bhakti Yoga and Bhakti. That's what we discussed yesterday. So they are already in the group. So if you're not in a group, you'll just have to go along with the presentation of each group. Okay? Everyone has a study guide? Who doesn't have one? Raise your hand. So we're on page 2 at the bottom. It says, Yoga Ladder Defined. I'm reading Bhagavad Gita 6.3 purport. The process of linking oneself with the Supreme is called yoga. It may be compared to a ladder for attaining the topmost spiritual realization. This ladder begins from the lowest material condition of the living entity and rises up to perfect self-realization in pure spiritual life. According to various elevations, different parts of the ladder are known by different names, but all in all, the complete ladder is called yoga and may be divided into three parts, namely Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. The beginning of the ladder is called Yoga Rurukshu stage, and the highest rung is called Yoga Rudha. On the next page, on the top 3, Path of Perfection, Chapter 2, similar. One may compare the yoga ladder to a step ladder and so forth. And if you go down 5 lines, it says, Sri Krishna delineates a number of yoga systems. Found it? Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Dhyana Yoga. In the previous one, Prabhupada says, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. So here he adds Karma Yoga. Got it? Yeah. And Dhyana basically is part of Astanga, or sometimes in general it is called meditation. Like that. Just like the chapter 6 is called Dhyana Yoga, but it discusses Astanga. And Dhyana has 2 meanings. Dhyana means meditation in general, and Dhyana means one step in the Astanga Yoga process also. Okay. Then it says, all of these systems are connected to God, or with God, Krishna, just as the entire ladder is connected to the topmost floor. That is not to say that everyone practicing the yoga system is situated in the topmost floor. Only he who is in full Krishna consciousness is so situated. Others are situated on different steps of the yoga ladder. And below that is animal life defined. In each, even the express elevator and the yoga ladders here, you see the word animal life. So basically animal life is not even on the ground. You heard of a saying in English, you're grounded like an animal. You heard this? You get grounded. You're practically pushed into a suffering situation. So animal life is not really on the ground, it is below ground, and the yoga ladder starts up there, like that in each part, even in the express elevator. So the basic idea of animal life is 4 things, Prabhupada says. What are they? Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Yes. So if we are absorbed in that, then we are good as animals, or even worse than animals. Because animals do that naturally, but human beings, when you do it unnaturally, they actually create an imbalance also. So they become worse than animals. So Prabhupada mentions that in the particular purport of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2 purport. Okay. Now, I'll take some questions from yesterday's discussion now. Anyone? Microphone.
Yesterday you mentioned 5 points on the original question we discussed yesterday. So, one answer you mentioned is about the pure devotee purifying when the atheist or Mayavadi chants the name. Another you mentioned about Ajamil is that a special case, the holy name involved in that. And then you mentioned about the associate of the Lord like Shishupal, and when they are chanting, they are also in a special category. But still the question about the so-called bogus incarnations, when they are chanting or they give the facility for the so-called people who follow them to chant, and the name is involved. I was just taking an example of, just like in a mental asylum, a mental case is thinking himself as a prime minister. For example, he is calling himself as Manmohan Singh. And then some people are following him and they are also calling him as Manmohan Singh. And the same mental asylum, somebody is calling himself as Krishna and some other mentals are following him. So what is the difference? Because it appears to be both are mental case, but in one sense Krishna is involved. In one case Krishna is involved. So the same as if compared to the bogus incarnations.
Prabhupada uses one word. He calls it phony Purusha. You know the word phony? P-H-O-N-Y. Phony Purusha. Huh? How you spell that? P-H-O-N? N-E-Y. Doesn't matter, it's phony both ways. It's a fake Purusha. So Prabhupada used to say, if there's a fake Purusha, then there must be some genuine Purusha somewhere. Because it's coming from a genuine situation. Like that. Now, maybe to complicate your question more from my side, if I'm complicating it. I gave the example, in South Africa we have a supermarket, you know, chain stores, called Hyperama. So normally the Muslims, they don't like Hare Krishnas. They have some, they keep away. But when they say, I am going to Hyperama, they are not offensive. You know? They are not offensive. But the same Muslims, when they go past the Hare Krishnas, and they say, oh, these Hare Krishnas, then they are unfavorable. So on one hand, they're chanting the name favorably, but it's meaning something else. It's meaning a departmental store, Hyperama. On the other hand, they will not say, you know, these Hare Ramas or Hare Krishnas. They'll say it in an unfavorable way. See? So they'll get Agyata Sukriti. Although they don't like us, but they say it favorably, meaning something else, but it will have benefit. Is that okay? To complicate it more. Is that alright for now? Any other questions from yesterday? Okay, we're moving on. On page 4, there's the diagram of the express elevator of Bhakti Yoga. We also have the same thing here on the chart paper, which is on your page 4. So I'm reading at the bottom. It says, Narada Bhakti Sutra, chapter 4. In ignorance and defiance of the recommended Yoga Dharma, unauthorized teachers make a business of teaching yoga and meditation. But since almost no one is qualified to practice the severe austerities of meditation, streamlined versions are taught, which are mostly a form of cheating. Then I go right down, because the other groups are going to discuss many things, 4 lines from the bottom, or 5 lines. But bhakti, by its very nature, purifies one's senses, actions, and powers that come. But bhakti by its very nature purifies one's senses, actions and motives. Moreover, one doesn't have to go painfully and slowly through every single step on the yoga ladder from karma to jnana to bhakti. But we shall go painfully over it also. Although we don't need to, for the sake of preaching. At any moment, whenever one decides to surrender, and whenever one gets the association of pure devotees, one can take the express elevator of bhakti yoga. So what is the importance of the association of devotees is on the next page. This is one of the most potent purports to help us stay in ISKCON. So I'm reading. I have to read this purport. It's most important. And similarly, somebody asked a question in the Sunday feast about association of devotees. So it comes from this purport also. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.11 purport. The significant point in Dhruva Maharaj's statement is that he wanted the association of pure devotees. Transcendental devotional service cannot be complete and cannot be relishable without the association of devotees. We have therefore established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anyone who is trying to be aloof from this Krishna Consciousness Society and yet engage in Krishna Consciousness is living in a great hallucination, for this is not possible. From this statement by Dhruva Maharaj, it is clear that unless one is associated with devotees, his devotional service does not mature, rather you'll go downwards. It does not become distinct from material activities. In other words, you'll compromise. The Lord says, Satam prasangam mama virya sam vido avanti ritkana rasanaya. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.25.25. Only in the association of pure devotees can the words of Lord Krishna be fully potent and relishable to the heart and ear. Dhruva Maharaj explicitly wanted the association of devotees. That association in devotional service is just like the waves of an incessantly flowing river. In our Krishna Consciousness Society, we have full engagement 24 hours a day. Every moment of our time is always busily engaged in the service of the Lord. This is called the incessant flow of devotional service. A Mayavadi philosopher may question us, you may be very happy in the association of devotees, but what is your plan for crossing the ocean of material existence? What does this mean? If you decode the same sentence I just read, it means that if you are not attracted to the association of devotees, you are an impersonalist. That's what it means. Because the Mayavadi questions that. So that's how you decode properly when you read Prabhupada's line like that. Okay. I'm reading on. Dhruva Maharaj's answer is that it is not very difficult. He clearly says that this ocean can be crossed very easily if one simply becomes mad to hear the glories of the Lord. Pavat guna katha. For anyone who persistently engages in hearing the topics of the Lord from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, and who is actually addicted to this process, just as one becomes addicted to intoxicants, it is very easy to cross the nescience of material existence. The ocean of material nescience is compared to a blazing fire, but to a devotee this blazing fire is insignificant because he is completely absorbed in devotional service. Although the material world is blazing fire, to a devotee it appears full of pleasure. Vishvam purna sukhayate. Now in the Sunday lecture also they asked the question in the last part from Anand Vrindavan Prabhu. So the same answer is here. Well, what we're doing here is none different from Golok. So let's read the last part. The purport of the statement by Dhruva Maharaj is that devotional service in the association of devotees. Devotional service in the association of devotees is the cause of development of further devotional service. By devotional service only is one elevated to the transcendental planet Goloka Vrindavan. And there also there is only devotional service. For the activities of devotional service both in this world and in the spiritual world are one and the same. Devotional service does not change. The example of a mango can be given here. If one gets an unripe mango, it is still a mango. And when it is ripe, it remains the same mango, for it has become more tasteful and relishable. Similarly, there is devotional service performed according to the direction of the spiritual master and the injunctions and regulative principles of Shastra. And there is devotional service in the spiritual world rendered directly in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But they are both the same. There is no change. The difference is that one stage is unripe and the other stage and other is ripe and more relishable. It is possible to mature in devotional service. What's the word? Only in the association of devotees. So here we find surrender and association of pure devotees. So one can ask the question, what is the definition of pure devotee? In 1969 or thereabout, Srila Prabhupada was asked the question by one professor, how many pure devotees are in your movement? So he asked one of his disciples, how many are initiated? He said, that many are pure devotees. In other words, when you take to the process of the vows and sincerely and seriously follow them, 16 rounds minimum daily and following the four regulative principles, you are situated on the path of purity. That means you are a pure devotee. Although you may have subtle material desires, but you are not moved to execute those desires on the gross platform. That means you are sinless. You're not sinning. You're following the four principles. That means you're pure. So that is the basic definition of a pure devotee. And based on that basis, one can become more and more and more pure. You are pure, but you can become more pure by following that. Minimum 16 rounds and following the four principles. So that's what it basically means here. So with that, we go up to sadhana, bhava and prema. And I'm sure you discussed sadhana, bhava, prema in nectar of instruction and nectar of devotion classes. You did this? Not yet. Because I thought I'm not going to discuss it because you're going to do it in the other books. Okay. Still, this has to be done. It's there in Nectar of Instruction and Nectar of Devotion, these definitions for sadhana, bhava, and prema. But at the same time, the example of the mango is given here, which we discussed in Vaishnava etiquette. You discussed it? Mango? Bitter, bitter, sour, 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 sweet, sweet. It matures through two things. The watering process and sunlight. Watering, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And the sunlight is the association of devotees. So which is more important? The association of devotees, because it includes the chanting of Hare Krishna. But chanting independently of the association of devotees will not bring one to the mature fruit of relish, of relishing devotional service, which is given so clearly here by Srila Prabhupada in what I just read about the point of Dhruva Maharaja's pastime. Okay, now, what do you call that part in the morning when it breaks from darkness into light? Dawn. Dusk is in the evening, right? Yeah. So dawn is this red line. You're coming from ignorance into light, red line. So dawn is very momentary. when it immediately breaks from darkness to light. So when you come into that position, from this position to sadhana bhakti, to actually take to sadhana bhakti through the association of devotees, they teach you, chant Hare Krishna, slowly follow the principles and so forth like that. That is between, from here to sadhana bhakti, this is between before you see the rays of the sun. Of course, the analogy is very quick, but for us this period takes pretty long, you know, to come to perfecting our sadhana. So this is compared to that feature of the morning when you do not even see the rays of the sun. From sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti, bhava means the first rays of the sun of prema. So when you see the rays of the sun, momentarily the sun automatically comes up. So this is dawn. This is before the rays of the sun to sadhana bhakti. Between sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti is the rays of the sun. And then between bhava bhakti, the sun comes up into the sun of prema bhakti. We okay so far? Everyone understands clearly? Okay? Now, when we say dawn, dawn only exists because the sun exists. Right? That period between dawn and the sun's rays only exists because the sun exists. And the sun's rays only exist because the sun also exists. In other words, you are experiencing dawn and the sun's rays, or in between the sun's rays, but you are not actually experiencing the sun. But it is because of the presence of prema there must be bhava. It is because of the presence of prema there must be sadhana. It is because of the presence of prema you begin your devotional life, which is called dawn. So in other words, that coming from darkness into light, that period of dawn, where you are coming into the association of devotees, and so forth here like that, and beginning to surrender to them, is part of prema. Is part of the sun. So in other words, all this, from here to there, is prema bhakti. Because it is part of the sun. Although you are not seeing the sun. You cannot say dawn exists on its own. It cannot. The sun's rays does not exist on its own. But you cannot see the sun although the rays are coming from the sun. You see the rays first, not the sun. So therefore, if you are engaged in sadhana bhakti, Prabhupada says in this purport that it is non-different from activities in Golok Vrindavan. That's what it means. It is part of prema. It is part of prema bhakti. So we should not take our devotional activities very lightly. It is of the highest pleasure of love for the Supreme Lord and for the pleasure of the Supreme Lord's devotees. Now, do you have any question? Before I take the question, there's one more point. When we say express elevator, all you have to do is place yourself here. Just like if you see there in your page number 4, there's a line here, right? You place yourself in this part of the elevator that lifts. You just have to be on the ground floor and put your step in the association of devotees and surrender to them. They will do the rest. There's no effort on your part after that. if you just even hang around, you know, without doing anything in the association of devotees, eventually you will begin to surrender and they'll give you service. And they will take you up. They will take you up to sadhana, to bhava and prema. It is that easy. But why is it difficult to place yourself in the association of devotees? Anyone can answer? Put your hands up. This is better. Okay. So you said lack of surrender to who? Yes. But then there is a type of surrender to what and who? You have to surrender to something or someone. Surrender to the mind. You said false ego. What did you say? False ego. What do you want to say? Everyone is on the false ego here, straight. Okay. Something? Yeah. In other words, something? In other words, we have to surrender. We have to surrender. We cannot help it, but we have to surrender. So why not surrender to the devotees? One way or the other, you're going to surrender to your mind. You're going to surrender to your boyfriend, to your girlfriend, to your wife, to your husband, to your country. You're going to surrender ultimately to the mind and the senses in so many ways, but through the objects of the senses also. So better surrender to the devotees. Just place yourself in the association of devotees. And they'll take you up automatically. Questions? Give him the microphone next to you there.
Because of the past material conditions, the surrender to a devotee, now whenever full-fledged surrender means whatever he says, you do that. But to do that surrender itself, it's so difficult. Like, how you feel that you calculate the activities, your mind is so calculative. Like whatever he says, you see the consequences. Should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? Like now, when you say surrender in association of pure devotees, now how do we? Should we differentiate between devotees and pure devotees? How should we go about it?
Anyone likes to answer the question? Contribute to that? Anyone? I don't want to do all the speaking because I don't feel like it. Because it's not proper also. You should contribute to the discussions. Yes, give him the microphone in the back.
In the beginning, when we come in bhakti, our heart is filled with anarthas. So, it's not that the day one which apply tilak, we get rid of all anarthas. So, when we come in association of devotee, the baggage of anartha and all past conditioning is still there with us. But surrender really means obeying the order, and when we start it, so one by one our baggage goes down and we become light and free. And our conditional modes also little lax. So, we can mold ourselves.
Is that okay? Yeah. See, the answer is very elaborate. It's given in very clear detail in Nectar of Instruction. It's like if I have to teach the book, you know, it's like an elaborate discussion. And there's like two dramas for that. Just to show you how to associate with devotees. It's there. It's given by Rupa Goswami very clearly. We just have to extract it in its practicality in ISKCON. Sometimes you may read the scripture, but how to practically apply within the association of devotees in ISKCON particularly needs to be discussed. So that takes a while. But however, I'll give you another scenario, another situation which I want to discuss based on your question. Is that okay? Anyone else would like to add to what he said before I do that? Yes.
Just adding to his question that surrender is very difficult. Sometimes in devotee's life, situations come where, for example, a devotee has to take care of his devotional life as well as his family, which is not, who are not devotees, who are karmis, are also demanding something. So on the devotee side, they request him to surrender to Krishna. But from the family side, he's stuck up over there also. So that is also, especially for a renunciate, like he's here in the ashram and there is nobody to take care of his family. For example, someone's father has died and his mother, brother, they are practically cannot take care of themselves, although they are not devotees. So on the devotional aspect, you see, he has to surrender over here and take care of his duties over here. But on the other side over there, so he's, someone may request him, okay, you surrender over here now. But it is very difficult.
On one hand, you may have family members to take care of in terms of they're not being devotees, but you have to be dutiful. Say, like maybe the only son or something like that. Right? On the other hand, you have a desire to surrender to the devotees. Who has to make the choice? Who has to make the choice? The devotees or the parents or you? Yes. So if you make a choice, you have to live with the consequences of that choice to the best possible way to try to be Krishna conscious. So it's not that when you surrender to devotees, it's a question of force. There's no force in the process of bhakti, but the question of being attracted, which is a type of force. Yes, it may be painful, but in the ultimate sense, everyone gets benefit in devotional service. You know, even those who are non-devotees. If you become a devotee, we know that very clearly. But the main point is that from the perspective of others forcing someone to surrender, that's not good. But from the perspective of one's own self to apply voluntary force to surrender, that is good. Because really sadhana bhakti means voluntary force from one's own perspective. Like that. Yes, voluntary force means sacrifice, and sacrifice means pain. Some pain has to be there. But the pain becomes pleasurable, which is not a force anymore. There's no, you know, forcing oneself. It becomes natural as one becomes purified. That, you know, Krishna consciousness is my very existence, not material existence. Is that okay? Yeah. Now, I just want to take the next... Oh, is microphone there somewhere? Yeah. Go ahead.
If I'm understood rightly, Madhendra Puri Prabhu's question, to surrender to Krishna or to take up to devotional service, you know, he said that one may have to compromise, if I understood rightly, with his duties to the parents. So, is it that he's only talking about surrendering to be a brahmachari? Because one can continue to be a householder, continue one's duty and take more shelter of Krishna in that condition. Yeah. Was it a devotional service or was it a brahmachari, joining brahmachari ashram? That means, are we separating?
He said brahmachari ashram.
Oh.
What do you say?
So one can continue to be surrendered, take more shelter in his consciousness, and at the same time also perform his duties. Is it difficult to do like that?
But who makes that choice?
The person who is going through the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
In other words, there's no question of force from both sides.
Yeah.
You know, the devotees cannot force you to surrender to be a brahmachari.
Yeah,
and that is your parents can force you. So you have to make the choice and live with your choice. But that choice you make may be applying voluntary force from your side, which is a little painful.
Yeah.
And voluntary force means sacrificing the lower nature for coming to the higher nature. That is all. And when you come to the higher nature, there's no more force involved. It becomes natural. Is that okay so far? All right. Now I have another situation. And this situation one has to be very careful for. Like that. Sometimes when we say surrender and association of devotees, in other words, a devotee, he is a devotee, he may be in the association of devotees. Finding it difficult to surrender at the same time is not associating with the devotees. You caught it? I will repeat. The devotee is a devotee. He's finding it difficult to surrender. But at the same time, he is in the association of devotees, but is not associating with the devotees. Who doesn't understand? Raise your hand. Don't be afraid if you don't understand. Raise your hand. Good. What do you not understand?
The last part of your statement, I do not understand how it connects with the previous part clearly. The first part you said is that he is in the association of devotees. So he is in there. And then the last part says he is not associating with them. So he is maintaining some independence, or what is it exactly? That's what I didn't understand.
So he has understood. You have understood. Who doesn't understand yet? You had your hand up.
What is the difference between associate, like being in association of devotees and not associating with devotees?
He also has understood. Who can give the answer to his question? Because that question arises from what I said, right? It's a natural question. So who wants to answer? No, he spoke a lot yesterday. So let him speak. What's your name again?
My name is... Anantanitai.
Anantanitai, okay. Anantanitai. So don't give an unlimited answer. Just limit it a little bit.
One may be in the association of devotees physically, but not mentally. That means he's not developing relationship with
but
the devotees.
Don't be mentally also. That's dangerous. Don't be mentally in the association of devotees because you'll be mental. In other words, you're trying to say that one is physically with the devotees,
but
not
has,
consciously.
Means then
use the word consciously. Use the word. You said one is maybe physically with the devotees, but not consciously with them.
Consciously, yeah.
So go ahead.
And he may be there, but having no relationship with the devotees, because association means one has to develop a relationship with devotees, very intimate relationship. So that is what is being in the association and not in the association.
Yes. The word is relationship. If there's no relationship, that means you're with the devotees, but you're not with them. That means you're neither material nor spiritual. You're not with the non-devotees, that is clear. And neither are you with the devotees. It is another form of impersonalism. That is very dangerous. And it is the most painful thing, actually, for a devotee. It is available right there. And he doesn't have any attraction for the non-devotees. He's not there either. So he's neither material nor spiritual. He's in his own world. It's called Tattastha Shakti. That is the actual meaning of Tattastha. He's in between. And it's a very traumatic situation for the person. Next question. How can that devotee be helped? In other words, I'm answering your question to some extent. Things. But this is like a very important point for ISKCON and, you know, being with ISKCON and so forth. How can you help such a person?
Help him understand the principle of Dadati Pati Grinati Guhyam Akhyati Prichati. So, by offering some gifts or some kind of service and accepting some kind of a service or some kind of a gifts, starts relating with devotees on by the way of physical objects. Mentally or on the mental level, he can inquire with the devotees. He can open his hearts, go to a person whom he has confidence in, and the person who is confiding in can give him the proper guidance and path. And the exchange of prasadam, it will develop.
So very true. Try to cultivate the relationship based on the six loving exchanges. But you can offer gift. Do not ask him to give you a gift. That's one thing. In other words, do not expect something in return from that person themselves. If you want to help the person, and do not preach to them. Never preach to such a devotee, but cultivate relationship. There's a difference. Like he said two things, you know, we should teach him the loving exchanges. Do not teach him, but you practice the loving exchanges on him in terms of just offering him a gift, but don't preach. And it may take the person a while to reciprocate, but leave it be. The fact is you're helping in that way. That is more than enough. It will soften the heart eventually. So this is very good. Yes? Go ahead.
If a devotee is facing this kind of problem, he has to surrender and have relationships on three levels. He has to surrender to senior devotees, take guidance from them. Then he has to be friendly with equals. And then as we know that...
Are you going to tell him that?
That is the only solution for him.
No, you cannot do that. You can't. You understand? I said, do not preach to the person. But you do not do prachar. You must do achar. That's all. That is all you have to do. You give your role model behavior to him. That's all. Come, that's the next question. Somebody else? Give the microphone on this side. We're asking for solutions. We're not taking questions, remember. You have a question. Further discussion on this. Solution.
We can spend some time talking to him, hearing about his sentiments and emotions, and this way try to develop some friendship with him.
In other words, you want to become his counselor. Yeah, spend some time talking to him means indirectly you're using the method to counsel. He'll pick it up. He'll pick it up. Somehow, such devotees are smart in their own way. He'll pick it up. He wants to preach to me. He'll pick it up. Like that. So you have to be careful. They must not feel that they are being preached to at all. Somehow it has to work like that. Okay. So now let's take the next question which Gauranga prematurely asked. He said, what if we try the methods of offering our better role models, you know, in terms of achar and our own behavior to the person to try to reciprocate and develop a relationship, and it doesn't work. Actually, it works. But you have to be patient from your side. In other words, if you're offering association without preaching to the person directly, eventually it will work. And you know how it will work? That person will be jolted to reality to take association, because he may go through some inconvenience of the body, of the mind, and of the senses to come to the spiritual platform. They may be jolted to reality. This is Krishna's way of doing it. And when they are jolted to some reality, then they're looking for shelter. Hey, okay, now it's time for me to talk to someone. That's when you'll become handy. They'll come to you because you have offered association in terms of developing relationship. And then when they are jolted to reality, they will come. It always happens. It always happens. Now, the other thing that invariably happens to such a devotee in the community of devotees, because they fail to develop relationships with the other devotees, but when one visiting devotee comes, you know, like a sannyasi or a senior devotee comes, when that visiting devotee comes, he'll go and open his heart. Why? When the visiting devotee comes, he doesn't even stay in the community. He's maybe there for a week or a few days. And then this devotee normally doesn't, you know, associate with others. Suddenly you'll say, he's making an appointment to see so-and-so Swami or Maharaj, so-and-so Prabhu who's visiting, like that. The community of devotees should encourage that. Because yeah, he's finding someone he does not have any unfavorable interaction with. And that someone who has come doesn't even know him anyway. And he doesn't know the person. But somehow he finds, well, maybe, you know, he doesn't know my dark side of things. Maybe I can speak to him on my bright side of things. Like that. It happens. And I can tell you, it happens to me all the time, every place I visit. Every place I visit. In other words, they only know me for 3 days. They know the other devotees for 30 years. Or 13 years. Or 3 years. But within 3 days, he wants to speak to me. But I don't know him, he doesn't know me. Then I can understand that this person is that type of devotee who is in the association of devotees, but not associating with devotees in terms of relationship. And when the community knows that this person is seeing a particular devotee who is visiting, it should be encouraged. You should encourage the visiting devotee. You please help. You know, like that. And then slowly the visiting devotee will bring the person back into the fold of relating to the other devotees. That's the system should be applied. So there's always hope. And the hope is because the person is not associating with non-devotees. The moment you associate with non-devotees, is lost. Practically you can lose. You know, like, but because he's there still chanting and, you know, struggling internally without any relationships, eventually that sincerity will lead to seriousness of relationships. Eventually it will break through. There's hope for that. Is that okay? But when they break through to come into relationships, for them it's very painful. It's extremely painful thing because they get jolted. Somehow they get jolted to some reality. And they will not say how they got jolted to some reality. They will not say. I'll give you one example, but do not use this example in a general way, because it is not applied to anyone who gets sick. It is not that someone who gets sick, that, you know, he is the one, that, you know, he doesn't have relationships with others, and Krishna made him sick so that others can serve him and he can develop relationships. So be careful when you're using, when I'm using this example. Do not generalize, you know. For example, Shamananda Prabhu is sick because he doesn't have any relationships with the devotees. You understand? Don't generalize like that. But in a sense, such devotees, because they do not receive care, on the sense of not receiving care that's not available. It is available to receive care. But they do not know how to reciprocate to receive that care, to develop relationships. They are hesitant due to some past karma of traumatic experiences, which is not out of the consciousness. And especially past experiences in terms of exploitation, abuse, even in a slightest way. What to speak of the heaviest and exploitation, abuse. Even if somebody slightly is abused, they are scared to develop in relationships, even on the spiritual platform. So you find that when someone like that gets sick, it's not that you label him, oh yes, he didn't have any relationships. We don't label in a general way. But generally they get sick. And when they get sick, then who attends to them? The other devotees, they'll take them prasad, visit them at the hospital, take them to the doctor, carry the person. Krishna puts them in that situation and then they realize, wow, these devotees really took care of me, you know. You know, they develop relationships. But it's a painful process that they go through to come to the realization that the devotees love me so much. But not in every case. I'm just giving you one example how they can be jolted. How they can be jolted like that. One book distributor, he was, you know, distributing books like anything, and he had first class relationships on how to deal with people, with the non-devotees, because he's a good book distributor. But when he comes to the temple, he has no relationships with any devotees like that. So while he was distributing books in a particular place, in an unauthorized place, he was distributing books. So one security man caught him and they put him in jail. And when they put him in jail, then he immediately had to phone the temple. He had to phone someone and he had to phone the devotees. So when the devotees came, and after 3 days being in jail, they brought prasad to him, and then, you know, the local judge or something said, no, he can leave because he didn't do anything criminal. Is that he was trespassing a property in terms of not doing what he's not supposed to do, distributing books. But when he came out of the jail experience, he was a completely transformed person. He realized that the devotees really care for him. And then they asked him, you know, what made you change? So he told. He said, I had to be in jail to actually appreciate the association of devotees. Because of his sincerity, Krishna makes such an arrangement. He's a sincere soul. But he just didn't know how to break through to actually associate with devotees. Is that okay? It's a most important topic. Because if that personality does not get the proper relationship and care in the association of devotees, eventually they will go back to the non-devotees, which is a very unfortunate thing. Because after so many billions of lives, you know, Brahmanda, Brahmita, Kona, Bhagavan, Jeev, people come to Krishna consciousness. And why should we lose one soul like that? You have any questions or comments?
Yeah, would reading Srila Prabhupada's books and listening to lectures, would that also be, in a way, considered association of pure devotees?
Yes. Just reading Prabhupada's books and hearing his lectures, will that also be in the category of associating with devotees? The answer is yes, and the answer is also no. The answer is yes if there's no other association around and you're living in somewhere in the deep remote part of Alaska. Or in Norway or somewhere, some remote part. There's no devotees, but you have Prabhupada's tapes. you have Prabhupada's books and you have tapes of other devotees that you hear like that. But Prabhupada specifically says in this purport, that we should associate with devotees, which is Prabhupada's instruction. So if you follow Prabhupada's instruction by associating with devotees, you are simultaneously associating with Srila Prabhupada in that way. So the answer is yes if there is no other association. The answer is no if there is association. One should associate with devotees. Because Prabhupada is not sort of, I'll use a strong term, but not to like belittle your question or something like that. Prabhupada is not useless. Prabhupada is empowered to make others empowered. And is empowered to make others pure devotees. Otherwise, what is the use of the process he's given us? Only he remains pure and everyone remains not pure? No. So in that way, just by reading and studying Prabhupada's books will lead to the practicality of associating with devotees, which means associating with Prabhupada's instructions to associate with devotees. Is that okay?
You said that there's a... Hello, Haribol. You said that in the beginning of this, you had said that you can associate with devotees and you can be associating with devotees and not associate with devotees. How do you know what level you're at?
What's your question got to do with associating and not associating devotees in terms of the level?
Well, if you're wanting to be at the level of associating with devotees and associating and...
In other words, he is saying that how does one know that he is in the association of devotees but not actually associating with the devotees and how to come to the point of association? Yes. You will know that if you are more and more attracted to spiritual activities and less attracted to material activities. If you are less and less attracted to material activities and more attracted to spiritual activities, then you know you have relationships of devotees. But if you are more and more attracted to material activities, but something is stopping you not to go and associate with the materialists, and less attracted to spiritual activities, you are in this position of being with the devotees but not associating with them. So then you can understand. I have to check. I don't have any attraction to associate with the non-devotees, but I'm getting my desires more and more. It's increasing. So you have to check whether I really have relationships in that way. Okay, I have to sort of move on. You had something in the back? Is something? You had something to say. Chirag, right?
I just wanted to ask, I don't know if I understood properly, but are you saying if there's a devotee who feels he has a very individual personality, maybe a quiet nature, so he likes to associate but he likes his own space also, so does that make him an impersonalist with a large false ego?
No. That's not an impersonalist. Because relationships means that the other devotees understand the other devotees' limitations according to his nature. In other words, we all have limitations like that. See? Now, to give you a simple example, like this afternoon, and I was quite exhausted. So I had to at least rest for 45 minutes to an hour before I came here because I had like 3 programs today. And it was quite exhausting. Not on the consciousness, but on the body. It needed to recuperate. But I'm just about to take rest and somebody knocks at the door. And somebody wants to meet me. And they're sort of in a distress situation. But I couldn't figure it out because I had to take rest, take bath, and come here and prepare for the class. so I couldn't really meet the person. But the person was waiting upstairs, both of them. As soon as I came out of the door, Prabhu waited for you for 2 hours. Like that. But, in other words, they didn't understand my limitations. Right? At the same time, they're in distress. So within 10 minutes, I finished up their distressful condition, and they went off happily, in that sense. But I didn't feel satisfied that I helped the person satisfactorily, like that. But it's not that they should understand my limitations. Rather, I didn't understand their distress, in that sense, like that. But at the same time, we find that the Western culture, this is in no way to minimize anyone. The Western culture means I want to have my privacy. Don't interfere with my privacy. Because I travel a lot to the West. And I don't interfere with my privacy. You know, I need to keep my privacy. And to the extent that, you know, the children will tell even the parents, look, I'm going out. But the parents cannot ask the son or daughter, where are you going to? That is my privacy. You understand the point? Yeah. But in Krishna consciousness, our life is an open book. It's an open book, especially for brahmacharis and sannyasis. Householders have their privacy, but it's not that private in terms of not being a devotee also. They have their privacy, but especially for brahmacharis and sannyasis, your life must be an open book in that sense. But gradually that can come. See? But at the same time, your question allows itself, look, I want to be on myself at times. You know, read on my own, you know, recuperate, listen to some tapes. That's fine. That's fine. In other words, you are doing Krishna conscious activities under supervision. And spiritual life basically means to allow oneself to be accountable. And when you allow yourself to be accountable, then you can be monitored. And that's the meaning of discipline, which means the meaning of disciple. Disciple basically means to be disciplined. And discipline means that you voluntarily allow yourself to be accountable. And when you allow yourself to be accountable, then there'll be monitorship. And monitorship basically means supervision, that we want to take care of you spiritually. So if you have your limitations, that you want some time to yourself because you are have a quiet disposition, you may not have a sociable nature, that's fine. But it should be under supervision, that the authority knows, look, you are doing something Krishna conscious. That's important. Now this is especially for brahmacharis and sannyasis. You know? Because householders, brahmacharis and sannyasis, there is the freedom. The freedom is that their life is an open book. But for householders, their life is a little bit entangling. So it is not that much of an open book, because there's some entanglement there. See? In that sense. It's not that we're belittling the householders, but that's the nature of the ashram. There should be some privacy because of the entangled situation. But for brahmacharis and sannyasis, it's freedom. Is that okay? I want to move on a little bit, if I can. We're going to go till 9 o'clock today, is that alright? Or are you tired for the day? 9 o'clock is fine for everyone? It will be better for today. Okay, fine, that gives me a break also. But I need to cover some things. You have a question?
What does it mean that we should... What is the meaning that we should be accountable? Can you explain?
It's not that you should be accountable. I said you should allow yourself to be accountable. There's a big difference. If you should be accountable means that somebody else is forcing you. But when you allow yourself to be accountable, then there's a sense of monitorship coming from someone else. Someone will monitor you for your spiritual progress. And allowing oneself to be accountable means voluntary force again, which is sadhana. Sadhana means voluntary force. Sadhana just doesn't mean morning program. This doesn't mean that you have to go to Mangalati, chant 16 rounds, you know, follow the four regular principles, obviously, attend, you know, a Bhagavatam class, chant japa. Sadhana means whole day. Sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti is not restricted to the morning program. So therefore you have to allow yourself to be accountable throughout the day through some spiritual authority. You're not forced to be accountable, but you have to allow yourself to be accountable. Is that okay? Alright. So we'll give a break for 5 minutes and then we'll ask the next group to go on to help us understand Sakama Karma Yoga. For today we'll do one group. Okay? And then, after we do Sakama Karma Yoga, and then we'll discuss basically, you know, yoga led at this number here. So when we finish Nishkam Karma Yoga, we'll link up each way of how to go up the ladder. First, we have to understand the terms. Yesterday we understood Karma Kanda. Today we're going to understand Sakama Karma Yoga. Tomorrow Nishkam Karma Yoga. And then we'll link this whole ladder up tomorrow. And we'll show you what's the difference between this Sakama Karma, Nishkam Karma, in terms of this. We'll show you that. And this can only be discussed, these two yoga ladders, can only be discussed in ISKCON. Or in the, you know, Gaudiya philosophy. But specifically in ISKCON, in relation to why Prabhupada translates the way he translates. We can only discuss that. Those who perform karma yoga of other sorts, they will not understand this. They will only understand the last yoga ladder. So to show the superiority of the process of a devotional service or bhakti, we have to do that strictly in relation to Prabhupada's mood and mission of why he translated what he translated in the same mood. Is that okay? So we'll give you 5 minutes break so that that group B, who's the leader? Group B? Oh. Who's the group? Raise your hand, Milan's group. Hi, stand up, please. Yeah. You're ready for the presentation? You can do it, right? Yeah, we give you 5 minutes. Everyone gets a break for 5 minutes. So who's the leader of the group now? Hey, can you stand up, please? Group B. Why are there so few in the group? Everyone else is sick also. There's supposed to be 8 to 10 in the group, right? What happened?
Putting the drama on the topic Sakama Karma Yoga, which means the devotee comes with the material desires. So here is the devotee who is joined the ISKCON movement with the motive behind, so which will be shown in this drama.
Wow, this devotee is so amazing, you know. He wakes up at 3 o'clock every single morning. He chants 8 rounds before even japa period. Wow, he's so amazing. I've never met such an amazing devotee. You agree?
Let's see. The time will show.
Oh, he's amazing. He's an amazing devotee.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
What's your name, Prabhu?
My name is Lipakta Leon.
Leon, you're from which place, Prabhu?
I'm from the U.S.
U.S.?
Yeah, that's right.
Wow. Great. Which place in U.S.?
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston? Oh, it must be a very, very nice place, isn't
it? Have you ever visited there at all?
No, not yet. But,
Have you got any Maha?
Maha? Yes. I'm the pujari here, definitely. And ISKCON, it's very famous for Mahaprasad. And you deserve all the Mahaprasad because you are our special guest.
Oh,
I get. Prabhu, can you get some Mahaprasad Madhuram sweets, please?
And I have Sandesh, is my favorite.
Yes, Sandesh. Please take Sandesh. This is Halwa.
Thanks, Prabhu.
Prabhu, where are you staying?
I'm staying just outside in the
outside? Area. You should stay in our guest house. Please get him a special room. VIP room. We'll get you that room also.
You got somewhere I can take some rest and maybe watch some TV or something, you know?
Actually, we'll get the cable connection. We'll get it in your TV, in your room also. Anything else, Prabhu?
No, you're serving me so nicely, Prabhu.
Oh, that is my service, Prabhu, right. Because we should serve Vaishnavas. Definitely.
So, this devotee is really amazing, but he's giving him Mahaprasad, he's giving him a guest house, but when I asked, he didn't give me anything. I don't understand.
You see, there is something fishy about this. Just 5 minutes back, I asked him some Mahaprasad. What he told, nothing is there, but suddenly how he got that Mahaprasad? Maybe I don't have a white skin, you know, something fishy about it. Probably I should go to the beauty parlor tomorrow, probably. Let's see what happens else. So, I'm going to give you a very important task. Tomorrow morning, you go to the new Bhakta Prabhuji and tell him that one Western devotee have come. And as soon as he would say something excited to you, and you should tell what I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you in the ears, very suspense. Okay? You understood?
That's okay, brilliant, Prabhuji. You're such nice devotees here.
Take some more Mahaprasad.
So, Prabhu.
Yes.
I saw you yesterday. You were serving very nicely, that devotee. So, another foreign devotee has come today.
Foreign devotee?
Yeah. From Somalia.
Somalia? Okay. Yes, Prabhu. So, you wanted something more?
So, my dear Prabhu, now you understood? It is not serving the Vaishnavas, but serving the Vaishnavas from which country. So this is country service, not Vaishnava service. So Hare now Krishna. Prabhuji will reveal the plan.
Hare Krishna, Prabhus. I wanted your help. I have been serving in this temple for so many years. Actually, I want to serve Prabhupada's mission more and I want to extend this compassion. So I want to preach. So Prabhu, this Leon Prabhu who had come from America, he has invited me and he desperately wants me there. So all my passport, everything is ready. So I just need a few thousand rupees if you can help me, Prabhu. And as soon as I go back, I'll call you also there. That would be no problem. So Prabhu, please help me.
You know, Prabhuji, they need help in Somalia as well.
Well, there are other devotees for that, Prabhu. But I need to preach there because Prabhupada said we should go to US, America. So I'm going to preach there. Please help me, Prabhu.
So he is serving in separation, you know.
I want to serve in separation. I want to serve Vrindavan in separation. So please help me, Prabhu.
So you should be careful after learning this lesson whom to take, whom not to take in his country, Vrindavan. Be careful. So here is the case where the devotee comes. So this example constitutes all the three categories. He is inquisitive about the Western countries and distressed that he is not able to go to the West and is in need of wealth also. So in this way people with various motives, mental desires comes to Krishna. Sakama Karma Yoga. Hari Bol, thank you for your participation. Any questions, the comments on this?
So what is wrong with this devotee having some desire to preach in the US? He's finally doing Krishna service. Right, he's going to preach the message of Krishna. Akama sarva kamama, moksha kamamudari. He's doing tivirena bhakti yogena. He's intensely desiring going to preach there. So that is, he's following the verse what Bhagavatam is saying. So what is wrong with that? He'll get purified in due course of time.
So he quoted this with akama, moksha kama, sarva kama. So he is in the category of either akama, but in the category of sarva kama, not even moksha kama. So we are not saying that he is a non-devotee, but he is not coming in the category of anyabhilashada sunyam. So he is a devotee who has material desires who want to get fulfilled. So he is not in a non-devotee category, but he is a devotee with material motives. So it's not We are not categorizing him as a non-devotee. He doesn't have any devotion. We don't say that. He is a devotee, but have material desires.
Lord Chaitanya is very magnanimous. Srila Prabhupada is very magnanimous. He has opened his society for International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So what is the wrong if somebody comes with material desires, going to America, going to, you know, other parts, but at least he is serving Krishna. So what kind of people are you expecting in your temples?
Of course, all of us, in that sense, we all have material desires. Maybe if you don't get hot chapati or lunch prasad, you may feel distressed, or you know, we may not able to at least for myself I'm saying. So in that, everyone has material desire, but at least minimum thing you should theoretically understand that you should not have material desires. At least minimum you should feel guilty that I have this material desire, and sincerely you want to continue in the path of righteousness in devotional service, but not that still I want to achieve material desires in spite of not doing the seriousness of devotional service. That is our understanding. Your turn.
Is the desire to have something gross in terms of money and some, like somebody wants land, different than having some kind of desire like hot chapati or prasad, or is it at same level?
So Prabhuji has a very nice answer for you.
So your question was that, is it on the same level, asking for chapatis vis-a-vis wanting to go to the West? Yeah, I think that is what we discussed. No? So it might, initially a person might come with different desires to Krishna, but it's not a problem. But as he is executing devotional service, as he is living in association of devotees, he understands the higher principles, and then he gets gradually purified also. So to the extent he is associating with devotees, hearing, and also acknowledges that this is not the highest. It's one thing to desire, and another thing to actually, you know, is one thing to know it actually. You can know it that this is wrong. Like for example, you are praying to Krishna, Krishna give me this desire, I have this material desire, I desperately want it. That is one thing. The second prayer is, I want this because this is my level, I am fallen. I also know Krishna that this is not the highest. So please help me, purify me and give me the intelligence to ask for the right desire, develop right. So that's another thing. So so a devotee might have material desires, but if he has this kind of prayer, where he wants to overcome it, then that is favorable.
Could you please define for me, when you say Sakama Karma Yoga, what is Sakama? What kind of Kama is like defined? When you say, like, because now we are sadhana, I am a sadhana bhakta. So I know that I'll have material desires, everything till the end of my life. So am I going to be in that stage? Or, like, is there a gradation?
Yes. Practicing devotee might have sakam and he also might be nishkam. He might gradually elevate. Like for example, one of the devotees, he told us that I want to serve all the book distributors. I want to help. I want to serve the devotees by getting them book distribution bags. So he had a lot of service attitude. So he bought nice bags with nice, strong bags for book distributors. And then we were pleased. And after a few days he said, Prabhu, that cost 3,000 rupees. So he was doing service, but he had, he was thinking he's going to get remuneration. So that could be sakam. And another devotee, he came to temple, he said, I want to serve. He doesn't want any result. He doesn't want any material reward for it. But when given service, he said, no, I want to only cook. I don't want to do backup. So he doesn't have attachment to the results. You know, he doesn't want, okay, I want something material remuneration. But he's attached to the kind of service. I will do this service only for Krishna. And then, another devotee, as he advances, he might say, okay, I don't mind any service. He is practicing bhakti yoga. He doesn't want any service will do. He is completely surrendered. So that is the third highest level. So we might be on the first level now. We might be attached to results also. Or second level, we might also be attached to the kind of service we are doing. But gradually we have to rise to a level where we are willing to do any service that is told to us. So that's okay. Right now we might be in that level.
So everybody comes with some material desires, and as the material desires are fulfilled, he will develop more faith. So what about this? You know that he will develop, if his material desires are satisfied, then he will develop more faith and then he can rise above. So more faith in the process if his material desires are fulfilled. So if material desires are fulfilled, anybody, if somebody has come for a job, that he wants to seek a job, and then he comes to Krishna Bhakti, that he would like to have a job, and he gets a job, so he develops more faith, then he increases his chanting, and then he keeps on increasing, developing more faith in the process.
A few different ways we can, this is very, this interesting topic. Like in the whole Vedic process, if Krishna is Supreme Lord, and ultimate goal is to achieve Krishna, but he has given so many processes within devotional service, different levels of devotional service, and even outside devotional service also, many things Krishna has given us. Why he has given? Because he knows that people are not on the same level. People are filled with material desires. So, unless the material desires are fulfilled, they get some satisfaction, they won't elevate themselves to higher level. So, there are different levels, people in different consciousness. In the shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, second shloka, Prabhupada writes in a purport that the whole Varnashrama system is established because there is a competition for material enjoyment. To reduce this undue competition for material enjoyment, these Varnashrama systems are constructed. So, we say for example, a Grihastha, he may have material desire. So, his level of material desire is that he want to have sex enjoyment. So, when he is in this level, when he does this enjoyment, he produces a child and raises them in righteous way. So he is doing the sense gratification, but also he is not getting entangled. But if a sannyasi thinks, you know, okay, let me also, Shastras explains, if you ever get married and produce a child and raise them nicely, you are getting this pious credit. So if a sannyasi also thinks, you know, it is there in the Shastras, so let me also do that. But for him, that is not the standard of morality or injection. For him, the order is higher. So different levels of people have different set of rules and regulations to be followed. And they get the different desires fulfilled. And then slowly, slowly, the point is they are slowly, slowly elevating themselves. So Krishna has given this process to elevate the people gradually. But in devotional service, if a person comes, the principle of devotional service is not that you are stuck up to that particular level. As we are telling, that why not fill material desires, I may increase in my faith in devotional service. So you can increase your material desires and increase faith outside devotional service also. But in devotional service you can have the same attitude. For example, you are chanting Hare Krishna and suddenly you are feeling that my material desires are reducing. So that is also achievement of a desire, but this desire is spiritual desire. So still your faith is increasing. From yesterday I chanted 64 rounds on Ekadasi, so I felt very good. So your desire is getting fulfilled, you know, I am feeling very nice. So your faith is increasing. Today I am dressed the deities, so I am feeling that my anarthas are coming down. So in this way also, spiritually also, your desires are getting fulfilled. So why we should always think about, you know, I should come to devotional service because my material desires are fulfilled, so I can put faith in Krishna. Rather than that, we should think that, you know, my spiritual desires are more and more increasing by constant endeavor and devotional service. Like for example, a clear example, it is said, when you walk on the road, once you see a materialistic person lower than him, for example, you are walking and you are wearing only a chappal and you are seeing a person is wearing a shoe. Oh my God, why God has given me only chappal, he has shoe. But rather than seeing the person is situated on the highly and material side, you should see a person who doesn't have a leg. He is walking like this. You see, oh God, at least given me, you know, two legs. He has only half leg. But when you come to spiritual side, we should see a person the opposite way. If you are chanting and you are dozing off, and other person is completely dozing off like this, you are thinking, oh, at least, you know, I am just dozing off a little bit. But he is completely sleeping. But rather in spiritual side, we should see a person who is doing much higher level. See, this devotee is chanting so nicely. This devotee giving class nicely. So I should also, you know, develop my consciousness like that. So materially, you are not seeing a person who is highly than you. You are seeing the lower than you and taking the Lord. But in the spiritual side, you should see a person who is higher than you and not to see a person who is lower than you. So in this way, when you come to spiritual life, rather than thinking that, you know, my material desires are getting fulfilled, so my faith is increasing. No. Spiritual desires are getting fulfilled, so my faith should be increased. That should be the proper attitude. I hope I have cleared it for you.
Is the Sakam platform a natural consequence of in the achievement of bhakti, or one can totally bypass it or do without it?
So we thank this group. Very good. Did anyone take a study guide from the desk by mistake? Did you have a dark copy or a light copy? Come here, I'll show you. Come. So this is a dark copy and this is a light copy. Which type you had? Well, then I have mine. Then. Mine is a dark one. Did anyone take a copy by mistake from the... That's yours. Oh, that's yours then, isn't it?
No.
So you need a copy, right? Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Now the other one is my notes there. Okay, let's look at the board. Quickly, we will go part of this yoga ladder. We have completed this today. So in this yoga ladder, we find that in animal life, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, the same propensity of animal life in terms of karma kanda, yesterday the play was there and they discussed, was that your propensities for sense gratification in animal life is unrestricted. But the same propensities for sense gratification in karma kanda is restricted. And the next difference is, because of the restriction, it leads to accepting some authority of worshipping of demigods. But it doesn't lessen your material desires. It is just that it is more disciplined. That is all in karma kanda. So in the word karma kanda, there's no word yoga. It's not linking to the Supreme. But in the word sakama karma yoga, there's the word yoga. Sakama means full of, calm, full of material desires. And karma means you want to fulfill those material desires in activity. But you're approaching the Supreme Lord, which means yoga. That is all. So Srila Prabhupada said that You can only come to devotional service, to answer your question briefly, you can only come to devotional service when your material desires are exhausted. You can only come to pure devotional service when your material desires are exhausted. And another time he said, pure devotional service is for those who are materially impoverished. So that's the way to come out of Sakama. In other words, you can exhaust your material desires within Krishna-related activities. Why approach the demigods like that? So on this yoga ladder, you find that there is an overlap of bhakti onto this. Can you see? There's an overlap. There's sadhana bhakti. When you perform sadhana bhakti from sakama to niskama, through sadhana bhakti you can become niskama. And then through bhava bhakti, from niskama you can go to prema in this yoga ladder. So we'll discuss more why that is there. Where you overlap, not the express elevator, but you're overlapping the process of devotional service into karma yoga. And there's only one personality who has done that in this world, and that is Srila Prabhupada. So therefore, when you read chapter 3, chapter 4, and chapter 5 in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 5 especially, Prabhupada gives a title. What is it? What's before that? Karma Yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. So that is the difference between this yoga ladder and this yoga ladder here. Prabhupada translates karma yoga as action in Krishna consciousness. And what is action in Krishna consciousness? Sadhana and bhava bhakti. But it is karma yoga in terms of action in Krishna consciousness. This karma yoga is different from this one. And what is the difference? Especially in India, you may get people, sometimes you meet them on the train and in a bus or an airplane or something. And they say, you know, I'm doing my karma yoga. I am performing my karma yoga. I'm doing my duty. You do your bhakti yoga, I'll do my karma yoga. You hear this often in India. Like that. So that type of karma yoga is yoga ladder on page 13. But this type of karma yoga is action in Krishna consciousness. And only Prabhupada has done that. So that's the difference between the both. Sometimes in sort of misunderstanding the Vedic culture, you know, they will say, all you young boys, why have you joined? Why you've given your youth and your young adulthood, you know, to Krishna consciousness? This is only for retired people. This is when you become 60, 70 years old, when you give up work altogether, then you can take to bhakti. Why have you given this up? Do your karma yoga. Perform your karma yoga means do your prescribed duties. Get married, have a nice job, have some children. That's what they want. See? That's what they want. So in other words, that is what is they mean. They mean that type of karma yoga here in Yoga Ladder on page 13, which is devoid of devotional service. It's very common in India. Very common. So therefore, you will find that Srila Prabhupada, when he translates, you know, the books, especially Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Srila Prabhupada is overflowing with prema bhakti, it can be safely concluded, is overflowing with love for Krishna or Radha Krishna, is overflowing. He cannot help himself. He cannot help himself. He cannot restrict his consciousness of bringing people immediately to the point of the perfection of life, which is Krishna Prema. He cannot help himself. So therefore you will find in his purports, it's always imbued with Krishna consciousness. Always. Every purport is always imbued. Because he's overflowing with Prema Bhakti. He's overflowing with Krishna consciousness. So he is empowered in such a way that he can take karma yoga and make it action in Krishna consciousness. He can take that. So that is the first yoga ladder. Number 6. The first yoga is imbued with the process of devotional service within this category of yoga ladder. And therefore sometimes people in India, they criticize Srila Prabhupada's translations heavily. They severely criticize. How can this man take, you know, karma yoga in chapter 3 and karma yoga in chapter 5 and say it is bhakti? How can he say that? But yesterday we gave the example, he can. Because who has spoken Bhagavad Gita? Yes. So it is full of Krishna consciousness on every page and every word. Because he's the author. Like that. So therefore, Prabhupada's translations is imbued to bring people immediately to the highest platform in terms of devotional service. Like that. So therefore, karma yoga means action in Krishna consciousness. And it's not just karma yoga of doing your prescribed duties in household life. Be a good son, be a good father, be a good mother, be a good husband, be a good wife. You know, all these social prescribed duties. So Prabhupada said, you can use those prescribed duties in Krishna-related activities. So that is action in Krishna consciousness. Don't just be a good mother. Be a good devotee mother. Don't be a good father. Be a good devotee father. Like that. So it's not morality. Krishna consciousness is not a process of just being moral. Like one society has us believe. Just be good, do good and see good. This is not the idea. The idea is how to do good, how to do Krishna conscious good. How to see Krishna consciously in that sense. And how to be Krishna conscious in that way. So Prabhupada has given us. It's unique. It's actually unique in Gaudiya Vaishnava history. It's completely unique. Just like in the Gaudiya Math, they, you know, you never allow certain things to happen. But Prabhupada has revolutionized that. You know, by crossing the ocean, giving the sacred thread to Westerners, so many things he has revolutionized. He's not keeping to that karma yoga, you know, that sort of caste thing, caste system. Because karma yoga technically prescribed duties in chapter 3 and chapter 5 means, you know, through chapter 4, Chatur, Vana, Maya, Shrisam, Guna, Karma, Vibhagas. All these things are there. So Prabhupada, he takes the Varna Ashram and makes it Devi Varna Ashram. Not just Varna Ashram. So therefore he takes Karma Yoga and makes it action in Krishna consciousness. Not just action according to your prescribed duties, devoid of love of God. Like that. So this is the two differences between the two yoga ladders. Because you'll come across people in your preaching that will go up this ladder. You have to know this. But not follow this ladder. You have to know this. So that when you preach, they can understand that you know what they're talking about. Like that. Okay? You have any more question or comment? We can just take one last one and then we'll conclude. Oh, there's two, there's three. So Govindaji, what do I do? You must give blessings, you know? No, no. Should I take these questions? Yes, yes, that is true. So we have to follow the Acharya. Okay, so one more thing, just a few minutes, just 2 minutes. Can you write your question down and so you don't forget, so we can continue in the, tomorrow? You will forget your question? Write it down, write it down, write it down. Write your question down so you don't forget. And, Haribol, what time are we meeting tomorrow? So please come on time, so because we can have more discussion and association of each other. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. And group number C and D should be ready tomorrow.